This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Sports Talk on WKAR AM, AM 870. I am not Earl Robinson, far from it. I am just a cheap imitation of Earl Robinson. Scott Moore from the Spartan Sports Network filling in for Earl today, and we've got a busy show for you. We'll be talking a little bit of volleyball later on with head volleyball coach Kathy George, who is out on the left coast getting ready for NCAA tournament action. We'll talk a little bit of hockey. Of course, I'm going to talk a little bit of hockey on the show. I'll be joined by Neil Koepke in a few minutes. And we are going to be starting off very shortly with our gymnastics coach at Michigan State, Kathy Klagas. The gymnastics team getting ready to open its season with their annual green and white game, green and white match coming up at Jennison Fieldhouse this weekend. We'll get all the details on Kathy Klagas and her team coming up in just a moment. A beautiful sunny afternoon here in the capital city, 46 degrees and sunny skies. It is just great out there on the campus of Michigan State University. A great day to be around, that is for sure. And there's all kinds of stuff going on in the world of sports and sports news. The NHL and their labor situation, they're trying it again. Negotiators from the NHL and the Players Association are expected back at the bargaining table today at a still secret location. The two sides got together yesterday for the first time in a week, and they were joined by representatives of the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service for the first time as they try to end a lockout that is in its 75th day, and all of us hockey fans certainly wish them the best of luck with that. But enough with hockey for the time being. We are going to get right to the phones and welcome in Kathy Klagas, the gymnastics coach at Michigan State University. Kathy, I was looking at the website. This is your 23rd season as the gymnastics coach here at MSU?
Yes, amazing, isn't it? How fast that time has gone.
Amazing. The thing that pops into my mind is, when do you start, or have you started recruiting the daughters of your first few classes?
No, that has not happened as of yet. So I'm not the grandma in the gym, though I am the grandma outside the gym to my own children already. I've got some grandkids. So,
well, tell me a little bit about the 2012-2013 edition of Spartan Gymnastics. What kind of team do you have this year?
We're really excited about our team this year. We gained 8 freshmen, which is almost half our team, for our scholarship athletes and for our walk-on athletes. And we're very excited about their addition to the program. They're very consistent, very well experienced in terms of being at a number of national competitions throughout their careers. And so we think they're going to bring a ton of experience to our program and really help us improve this year.
How much time do you get to work with the student athletes before the competitions get going? I know it's different in different sports, basketball and football. You get a lot of time before the first games. Hockey, you start on a Saturday and you're playing games that weekend. What's it like in gymnastics? How much pre-work do you get with these kids?
Well, I think we probably have the longest preseason in the NCAA. We start officially with 4-hour practices 5 days a week in mid-September.
Wow.
And we don't start our actual competition season until January. We start January 12th this year. So these young ladies have been at it a long time. And it's just the nature of the sport. It's one of those things about our sport is that you have to develop skills, and then you have to develop the combinations of skills together, and then you put them into half routines and then into full routines. So it just takes a long time to get the athletes ready after a summer of individual skill training. I was going to say after a summer of being off, but they never stop training. So
I don't think there's a college sport that isn't 12 months a year now.
Correct.
Exactly. For those who might not be familiar with college gymnastics, never been to a meet, tell us, what are the apparatus you use?
We use the vault, the uneven bars, the balance beam, and the floor exercise. And those are the women's events, very, very similar to what you see in the Olympics, those same four events. The difference is we use a different scoring system. So we have retained the perfect 10, which is really exciting to see. We've had a couple of athletes here at Michigan State score a perfect 10, and it's really exciting and really fun. But it also makes it a little easier to understand when you're watching a competition and a girl scores a 9.7. You know they've made a few errors because you know what the end product is, a perfect 10. But at the Olympics, they just can keep adding more difficulty and more difficulty and keep raising their score. So it's hard to figure out, you know, is a 14 good or is a 16 good?
It's different. I fell into that trap watching the gymnastics during the Olympics this summer. As you know, I'm going, what, a 15? What? I thought 10 was the best.
Right. Well, they changed the system in the international gymnastics world. And so, as I said, the USA Gymnastics program, the grassroots program for colleges have retained that 10-0, and so has the college program.
So that's something that that your athletes are used to. You know, you mentioned the Olympics. So much attention focused on the gymnastics team this year, the great job that Team USA did, including our very own DeWitt's Jordan Weber from the area. Do you notice, I mean, you've been at this a while, do you notice a sizable bounce in interest in your sport following Olympic years?
Absolutely. Every club coach I've talked to this fall has said, oh my gosh, we're so crazy. We need help. We've got so many kids in the gym. And it's awesome for all of the programs where they have increased their, you know, gymnastics attendance in their private clubs. And then what we hope carries over to us is that interest from watching the Olympics in the summer will carry over to, hey, let's go see a meet live. And the exciting thing about, you know, gymnastics is that to the layperson, it's difficult to realize, you know, if you go up in the air and you flip twice, you know, that's pretty cool. And whether you do it in a tuck or a pike or a laid out position or you twist in there, the layperson may or may not figure that out. It just is pretty cool to see somebody go up in the air and flip twice. So the college level is a pretty high level. And you might not be able to tell a lot of difference between, you know, the college girls and the Olympians. They do more difficult skills. There's no question about it, but the layperson just may not be able to tell. I think they'll be able to enjoy it just as much as they did watching the Olympics this summer.
Sure, certainly. You know, speaking of the Olympic quality athletes, are there any, you know, I noticed, for example, the female swimmer, Missy Franklin, has recently announced that she's going to go on to college and compete at college. Has there been Olympic gymnasts that go on and compete in college? Would Jordan Weber be eligible for college? I have no idea what the NCAA rules are on that.
Well, a number of the athletes on that Fierce Five team have elected to go pro. And so they have received monies, so they are not eligible for NCAA competition, and I can't speak about any of them because they're all underage at this point.
Okay,
time.
All right.
However, there are a number of them that have already selected to go pro, and so they would not be eligible for college recruitment.
Okay, but certainly some of the girls that maybe went through the trial selection process, if they were under college age at that time, that would be an option for them.
Absolutely, and there are a number of young women that have done the Olympics and have gone on to do college or gymnastics, and then, of course, there's a number of them that have elected not to do so, like Astron Johnson.
Yeah, okay.
She did not do college gymnastics.
Well, let's talk about your team again. You get your season going this weekend with your green and white scrimmage. Give me the details on that.
Well, we're going to be having a competition. We've divided the team up into a green team and a white team, and we will be competing up in the third floor gym at Jennison Fieldhouse. So we're going to be in our practice facility, and we do that so that the athletes can still land on a little softer landings if need be.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting competition because we allow the crowd to come right up next to the event that we are performing on, and so they get to see it very close up and very very personal, shall we say. And so that's the excitement of this competition. And we will be using, I'm actually going to be judging the competition along with a couple other celebrity judges, and we are going to be doing all four events. And then on Friday night, we're actually So that's what's happening on Sunday. And then Friday we're going down to the University of Michigan for a like an exhibition scrimmage for our competition. And we're going to be riding Chrysler, so that'll be the next step to go to the full competition landings, which means we can't use the soft resi pit, landing. Mm-hmm. So we'll be doing that on Friday night, and we're really excited about doing that. And then, as I said, our season starts January 12th at home.
Okay, so Sunday, what time? And it's on the third floor of Jennison.
Yes, it's at 1 o'clock, and it's on the third floor of Jennison, and you'll be able to see those gymnasts up close and personal. You'll be amazed at what they do, what their bodies can do. It's pretty incredible what these young ladies can do with their tumbling and their twisting, and to see it that close up when you're at a competition in Jennison Fieldhouse during the regular year. We're down on the fieldhouse floor, and you know, there's bleachers and ropes, and it keeps you pretty far away compared to what you're going to be able to see on Sunday. So we're really hoping to get a good crowd here to see, you know, to see the preview of the 2013 team.
Well, we really should get out there to see that. Kathy, if you've got just a second, we do have a phone caller that has a question for you. We'll say hi to Jerry from Hazlitt. Jerry, how you doing?
Pretty good, Scott. Kathy, this is not something that I have particularly experienced with my own kids or anything, but I wanted to ask you, there had been some attention given recently and then possibly some guidelines concerning injuries, particularly in the areas of cheerleading. I didn't know if there were some recommendations, I think, that were made. I wondered if you're aware of them. Do they pertain to gymnastics? And what do you do specifically to safeguard against injury? And could you comment on maybe what the trends are in the sport?
I'll do my best to answer your question. Injuries are a part of our sport. There's no question about that. And what we do to try to safeguard them is to use the proper progressions of moving from skill. We do a lot of drills with our skills that we're learning, and then you finally learn the skill. You might use a safety belt or hand spotting to learn the skill, to put your body in the proper positions to learn the skills, and then you slowly will put that into a combination. So we take the entire fall. That's one of the reasons we have such a long preseason. You take the entire fall to move from, you know, one level to the next level to the next level to the next level. The other thing that we do is we have what I call resi pits, or some gyms have what they call a foam pit, where there's cubes of foam. So the athletes learn their skills into that foam pit or the resi pit. So they're landing on very soft surfaces, so that if they do make an error, it's a lot easier on their body than landing on a regular competition floor. The one positive thing about the NCAA is that all the programs have an athletic trainer that's assigned to their sport. And so we have a certified athletic trainer, Destiny Tichner-Hauck, that is at our practice every single day. And she prepares the team beforehand. So if somebody's had an ankle sprain and they're just, you know, returning from that ankle sprain and still need to be taped every day, she's taking care of taping those people, and then doing any kind of treatment that they may need. We also are very lucky here at Michigan State. The USA Gymnastics medical team coordinator is Dr. Larry Nassar. And Dr. Nassar is our team physician for Michigan State Gymnastics. And I can tell you, probably any club coach that you talk to in the nation will tell you he is the best. And we're so lucky to have him here at Michigan State. And so if an athlete does get injured and the athletic trainer deems fit that she needs to see the doctor, she will see the doctor immediately that afternoon or the next morning. And it's usually we try to get in to see Dr. Nassar. And if he's not available, there are many other quality doctors here at Michigan State. The trends are something that I think are, you know, they seem to change. It seems like with, you know, the class that you get in, I'm sorry to say that it can be anything in the sport of the gymnastics, from a concussion, a neck injury, shoulder injury, you know, pulled groins, pulled hamstrings, ankle sprains. I've seen the gamut of them over my 23-year career here at Michigan State University.
Okay, I believe I asked that simply as an intellectual inquiry, not to. I know it's probably a delicate area to discuss, but as far as you know, then in summary, then the recent guidelines that were mentioned about cheerleading don't necessarily were they directed beyond cheerleading or in your particular sport? Or
I don't know. I'm not aware of those directives. I'm not sure, you know, what you're talking about, so I can guarantee you that they have not been directed towards me. Is it an NCAA directive or a...
Yeah, I confess I don't know the specific details, but there was some mention of them, particularly with the regards to cheerleading injuries that evidently had either not been reported or not there wasn't sufficient attention paid to them. But I think you've answered my question, as completely as you could on that, Kathy, and I appreciate you taking the time. And Scott, thanks for taking the call.
All right, Jerry, thanks for listening and thanks for calling in. And Kathy, thanks for taking some of your afternoon to get us all up to speed on gymnastics and what's going on with your team this year.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate it. And we hope to see everybody out here Sunday at 1 o'clock.
All right. 1 o'clock at Jenison Fieldhouse. Thanks again, Kathy.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. That's Kathy Klagas, the gymnastics coach at Michigan State University. We've got Neil Koepke coming up right around the corner. But first, we've got a short break to take on AM 870.
A newly re-elected President Obama faces an immediate crisis in Syria, a looming confrontation with Iran, and a strategic challenge from China. I'm Neil Conan. Join us for a special broadcast from the Wilson Center, Barack Obama's Foreign Policy, Take Two. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Today, the high will be 45, and it'll be mostly sunny. Tonight, partly cloudy, with a low of 32. Friday, mostly cloudy, maybe some light rain tomorrow, the high 42. Partly sunny and a high of 51 Saturday.
And welcome back. Our temperature is 46 degrees, and we've got sunny skies currently in the Lansing area with winds out of the southwest at 11 miles per hour. Interesting conversations with Kathy Klagas, and we'll have Neil Koepke coming up here in just a moment to talk a little bit of college hockey with us. Neil keeps his fingers firmly on the pulse of everything having to do with both college hockey, and he keeps his eyes on the pros. You know, not only the Michigan State team, not only CCHA, but all across the scope of college hockey. And we'll be talking with Neil about that in just a moment. It's been a bad day for Ndamukong Suh lately. He found out he's going to take a $30,000 fine for his, quote, inadvertent, unquote, foot placed to the nether region. It just hurts to even think about that, of Houston quarterback Matt Schaub during the game. And then he was involved in a traffic stop as well. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Just not a great 24 hours for our buddy Ndamukong Suh down the Detroit area. But that is football, and it's time to talk a little bit of hockey with our buddy Neil Koepke, formerly of the local newspaper and now with MSUSpartans.com. And Neil, the college hockey season, one-third of the way into the books. Looking first at the CCHA, has anything surprised you regarding what's been happening so far standings-wise in the league?
You know, Scott, there are a couple surprises, and one that I'm surprised at that probably may not register with maybe the general fans because they probably sort of expected it. But I'm really surprised at, like, two things. One is Miami being able to recoup from all their losses. Two goaltenders, three defensemen, and a couple of, like, three forwards, a lot of heart and soul leadership guys that have left Miami. And I thought they'd take a step backward, maybe not dropped too significantly from the pack, but maybe from, like, the top two to maybe four or five or six, depending upon how the goaltending went. And here they are, Scott, ranked, like, I think four or five in the country. You know, they're sitting at the top of the CCHA. But more importantly, I think the fact that they've been able to transition from the players from last year to a quality team right now that is basically, got a lot of skill and has the goaltending. And I think they've got a lot of grit, and they play an aggressive style that they're going to probably be in the hunt that we maybe thought they weren't. And so that's one, and I think the other one a little obvious, and that is Michigan being under 500 at Thanksgiving for the first time since, I believe it's 1988.
I was going to say, it's got to be a long time.
It is. And yet, if you go back to recent years, there's been a few, Scott, where Michigan has been only maybe a couple games above 500. And even last year, which I didn't realize until I sort of took a look at it, Michigan was 7-7 after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where you tend to not to remember is because Michigan or some other teams tend to take off, you know, right after that, and in January, February, put together like, you know, like a 12-4 record, and then next thing you know, you've forgotten about the early top start. But I think in Michigan's case, two new goaltenders, you know, and some missing pieces that maybe are more more serious than we all thought in terms of like chemistry and so forth. So I'm certainly convinced that Michigan, with all the talent and skill that they have, will get it together. I'm just not certain if they're going to be the elite level dominant team. In fact, I think one of the main surprises that we've talked about, Scott, is the balance, the consistency of the teams in the league, and it's basically becoming a split league. And if you look at the standings, everybody's bunched up right now. No one's separating themselves. So some teams you thought are going to struggle a little bit aren't, and some teams you thought might be taken off, you know, like Michigan and so mm-hmm. forth, haven't done that. So it's really parity is always talked about, but probably never more than it is this year with some teams that are very good, and yet you can't really a sweep in this league now is a big thing because it just seems everybody's so even. So
well,
even
you look at
the teams at the bottom you thought that might struggle, I think they're having pretty good seasons mm-hmm. and they're very competitive.
You look at all of the weekend splits that we've had in the CCHA all season long. It's just evidence of what you're saying. The parity in this league is something else.
I mean, it's really it's happening in other leagues too, in a sense, except it just seems that everybody is bunched up and the teams like you thought were going to be tail-enders. And again, what people sometimes forget in college hockey is that you can be four games under 500 at Christmas, and you're not out of it because there are still 2 months to go.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, North Dakota and the WCHA has been made a living at this, where we've written them off at Christmas thinking, you know what, just another, just a down year for them, unusually. And then they put together, you know, like a 14-1-2 run, and suddenly they're back in the top two and competing for NCAA, you know, titles and so forth. So, and there are some teams in W and Hockey East, the same thing, that's happening. So, again, that first half of the season is important, but it's what you do in, obviously, the Januarys and Februarys and how you set yourself up from the first 2 months. And, again, experience, goaltending, people coming together, mm-hmm. you know, injuries, a lot of factors here. But again, at this point, in at least the CCHA, it's amazingly competitive, and the parity is just unreal.
Well, speaking about the Spartan team in particular, based on what you thought you would be looking at before the season started and what you're going to be seeing this weekend at Munn Ice Arena, what's your opinion? Are they better, worse, or maybe right about where you thought they would be this season?
I think, in a way, I think they're a little bit better. They're more competitive than I thought, and yet you could say, well, they're sitting at 4-6-2, and that's pretty good because they've been able to compete, get splits with the defense that they had, Scott, in terms of the freshmen or the new faces with 5 of 6 out there, you know, or mm-hmm. or 4 of 6 because obviously Grassi was coming back and so was Jake Chelios. But again, you know. The senior, Matt Grassi, didn't play from January on last year.
Right, right.
So he hadn't played in a while. And with all the new faces on D and then a few up front, I just thought that they would struggle a little bit more defensively than they have. Part of the reason, I think, is that they've basically followed a pretty good system. And also goaltending has been very good, especially with the emergence of freshman Jake Hildebrand into the mix. He's been really good. And I just got done talking to Tom Anastas, just fill me in on the Miami series 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. that Jake single-handedly kept his team in the game
oh,
on the second night, gave them a chance to actually, you know, maybe pull that game out once they lost 2-0. But he really has become a smooth type, relaxed goaltender, and it really is going to give Michigan State a good presence if Will gets pushed and Will Yanikoff, you know, boost his game, which I think he will. Mm-hmm. And obviously with Jake having a pretty good start and he continues it, that's going to really be a strength. And I think the defense, as it gets old, as it gets more mature, used to playing with each other, I think they probably can get better. I don't think you'll have that defensive offensive trust that we had with Torrey Krug, because Krug was just so dynamic that
right.
he could you know, lead it single-handedly in a lot of ways. But again, the key is, as Tom pointed out this past week at the press conference, he just needs to get some consistency on offense and do it every night, as opposed to some games they get 6 and 7 goals, other games they get 1 and 2. And they have to have more 3-goal games, because if you have a 3-goal game, you put yourself in, you got a good chance to win, because mm-hmm. it's so tight, tough to score. And if your defense is playing so good that you can not give up more than 3 or 2 at best, well, then you're going to put yourself. But you can't have too many games where you score 2 and 1 and have success. And right now, I believe that's the challenge. So, again, I think they're going to be a lot better in the second half. But, again, they're an interesting bunch. They work hard. And every now and then they throw up a 7-2 game against Michigan or a 6-1 game against Bowling Green. And it's pretty exciting because of the work ethic and just the way things evolve here. But interesting look at the young players, because as the sophomore, 3 sophomores are the leading scorer, or 2 actually, and 1 freshman. So that's really an interesting take. I think if the offense picks up a little bit second half, you'll be seeing more a potential to sweep series as opposed to split, and maybe go on the road and make sure you get splits instead of getting just maybe a loss and a tie or 2 losses.
Well, and some home games for Michigan State will make some difference, too. This team's been on the road an awful lot in the first part of the season. We're talking with Neil Koepke from the from MSUSpartans.com. And, Neil, there's one national story that kind of snuck up on me, at least. It hasn't been getting a whole lot of attention around here, and you would have thought that it would have. That's the fact that Jerry York at Boston College is creeping up on Ron Mason's career victory mark of 924 wins. He has 923 going into this weekend against their arch rivals, Jackie Parker and Boston University. So with a sweep, Boston College sweep, he would finally leapfrog over Ron Mason. And, you know, I think that's going to take a few people by surprise, because that was a record that I certainly thought was going to last forever.
Yeah, when Ron said it and added to it, we all thought that that's some record that probably will never be broken. But when you have coaches like Jack Parker and Jerry York and Red Berenson and so forth, and even not as much as Red, because Red got a late start,
mm-hmm.
but those coaches were always in good health, and they continued. And over the last, like, 5, 6, well, 10 years, because Ron's been out and Ron has coached, well, he's put in some 30-game, 30-win seasons.
Right.
Several. And so that adds up fast. And so, you know, once we looked at it like 3 years ago and you knew that Jerry wasn't going anywhere, he was figured, you know, if he stays on course, he is going to break it. Like, and we always thought it'd be this year because of it'd be tough to break it sooner. But that's really a tremendous mark. And I think in the long run, Jerry might have coached in a sense 5 more seasons total. But again, when Ron Mason was getting some of his victories to start too, it was at Lake Superior State, and they were playing some Division III schools,
right.
and some schools as he was like scheduling to enhance his own program there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, a win's a win, and it takes a certain coach to be able to put it all together to do that over the period of time. And again, it's, I think, surprisingly fitting that that he can tie it on Friday against his arch rival, and then, and then try to set it against his arch rival again on Sunday.
As if Boston University needed any more incentive to play hard in that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's the second storyline, second and third storylines, because you know, the main storyline, the rivalry, and then another one is that BC already has beaten BU once, and I think it was at BU. So now, here we go again with 2 more games, and they just played like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and here they are again. And and obviously BU on their home turf does not want to see a Boston College. I mean, it's like a Michigan State
thing. Oh, yeah.
A Wisconsin, Minnesota thing. It's nasty. It's you know, the city. And basically, the conventional wisdom is that Jerry will probably get one. BU will make sure he doesn't get two. And then I believe it's next weekend, either Friday or Saturday, when Boston College plays at Providence. And already people are talking about sending about a bunch of busloads from BC down mm-hmm. there to give them one of their biggest crowds in Providence, and it'll be a pro, obviously, BC crowd. So that'll be interesting to see if it plays out. But certainly a great, great record for Jerry. I had a chance to cover him when he was at Bowling Green, and Michigan State were, you know, competing against him, and he got to know him pretty well. And mm-hmm. I watched him win an NCAA title, his first one, when he was coaching Bowling Green against Duluth, and got to celebrate with him. So he's always been just a pro, great hockey guy. He is like the epitome like of a Bob Johnson that's always talking about it's a great day mm-hmm. for hockey. Well, mm-hmm. that's Jerry York. He's that type of upbeat guy, personable guy, and loves to talk about the sport and the all the things that are going on in the game. And I give him credit. He's lasted a long time, and, boy, he just has it going at BC, which is like the Duke of you know, college hockey type of thing, the Alabama of college hockey. He is just an amazing recruiter, an amazing coach, and good for him that he's lasted this long, and good for me that I actually got a chance to cover both of those coaches that are on the top of the list.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the thing that I was thinking is if there was going to be a coach that was going to eclipse Ron's record, Jerry York would probably be one of my favorite guys to be able to do that because, like you said, he is incredibly personal. And you know, he's a great guy to talk to. He's a great guy to talk hockey with. And how ironic that these are the two guys that followed each other at Bowling Green.
I know. That's another storyline, too. Yeah, it really is. And you know, in a way, I'm thinking that Jerry York, if I think back, was a candidate at Michigan State when Ron got the job.
It might have been, because he was having a good run at Clarkson then.
You know, he had come from, was it Clarkson? So it wasn't as well known. And Ron got the job, and then basically Jerry just felt it was time to move out of his comfort zone of the East and to his coaching Clarkson, and he just wanted to, and he knew he wasn't going to get the BC job at the time because the coach was already in place there.
Oh, yeah.
And so he obviously looked at Bowling Green as a place where emerging program, emerging league and so forth, and just hooked right up in there, and next thing you know, he's having great success there, and he wins a national title. So and then Rob Mason, had success at Michigan State and then became great rivals amongst the two because at one time when Bowling Green was great, Michigan State mm-hmm. was just back on top. That used to be one of the best series around college hockey.
Oh, that was a hot rivalry.
A big rival for Michigan State at the time because the programs were so good. Those games down there and here were just were thrillers. High-scoring games, obviously, because that was the time, the nature of the game, but just tremendous skilled players on both teams.
We've got about 1 minute left with Neil Koepke. I know it's early. We're only a third of the way through the season. But as of today, do you have four favorites for the Frozen Four?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I like the way Boston College is just continuing on to be very, very good. You know, I like the way one of the ECAC teams is doing. I like Union. I think they're going to be up there. Mm-hmm. Or Cornell, but I think Union might be there. And Minnesota, as you've seen and told your audience at times,
oh boy,
they are one of the top teams in college hockey. Great strength, great depth, and just tremendous offensive skills. I think they'll emerge. And I think in the CCHA, I think it's a mix, but I think this is the year that Notre Dame gets there again because I think they've got the goaltending to do it. We'll see it. They may not play the most exciting brand, but they've got the ingredients, I think, to get there. And obviously there's about eight other contenders for all these positions. But I think those are my Frozen Four right now.
All right. Well, Neil Koepke, it's always a great time talking hockey with you, and I will see you at the rink Friday and Saturday.
Okay, Scott. Good talking to you.
All right. That's Neil Koepke from MSUSpartans.com. Time to take another break on Sports Talk on AM 870.
50 years ago, the U.S. and the Soviet Union narrowly avoided nuclear war and the Cuban Missile Crisis, in part because Washington and Moscow controlled the triggers. Now, with nuclear buttons in Beijing, New Delhi, Islamabad, Pyongyang, and Jerusalem, what lessons can we learn from history? I'm Neil Conan, avoiding the next Cold War, plus Jane Harmon on a world led by women. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio.
Today, the high will be 45 and it'll be mostly sunny. Partly cloudy with a low in the low 30s tonight. Friday's outlook, a chance of light rain and mostly cloudy, the high tomorrow in the low 40s. Saturday, we'll have a high in the low 50s, and it'll be partly sunny. I'm Scott Pohl.
Thank you very much, Scott. Again, 46 degrees under sunny skies in the capital city. A great day on campus here at Michigan State University. And we are making the phone call now to finish up our triumvirate of Spartan sports talks for today. Kathy George will be joining us momentarily from out in Los Angeles, California, where she's getting ready for NCAA tournament action. Getting back to hockey for just a moment, big series for Michigan State this weekend, taking on Ohio State Friday night at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 6 p.m. over at Munn Ice Arena. Friday night, there's a special deal that's just been announced. If you're a member of the Michigan State University Federal Credit Union, MSUFCU, credit union members who show proof of their membership at the east door to Munn Ice Arena. That's the side, the same side of the building as the pool on Chestnut Road there. If you show proof of your membership in the MSU Federal Credit Union, you will be given two free tickets to Friday night's game. So come on in and join the fun. And that offer will be available while supplies last. And then the MSU FCU also will have tables on the concourse where they'll be handing out special green and white gifts for people coming to the game on Friday. And that is while supplies last as well. And then on Saturday, it's the annual student athlete hockey team or student athlete food drive to benefit the Greater Lansing Food Bank. Bring a non-perishable food item, toiletry item, or your checkbook, that's available as well, to the arena. Varsity athletes will be positioned on the concourse to accept your donations. So very definitely a big weekend over at Munn Ice Arena with the Spartan hockey team, and we urge you to come on out and see Michigan State versus Ohio State. From hockey on to volleyball, and we are joined now on the phone by head coach Kathy George, wrapping up your eighth season, I believe, is it, as MSU head volleyball coach, Kathy?
Yeah, I guess it is. I haven't thought about that much lately, but yeah, 8 years.
8 years, another trip to the NCAA tournament. You got your work cut out for you, though. It's going to be almost a home game for your opponent in this first match. You got San Diego playing in Los Angeles. That's not a long drive for them.
No, it's not, but I hope it's filled with a lot of traffic.
And there's plenty of traffic out there, that's for sure.
There sure is. It's taken, like, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes to go 5 miles here. So.
Oh, boy. Well, tell me
a good day.
tell me a little bit about your opponents in this first NCAA game.
Well, San Diego tied for a share of their league title this year, so they're a very, very strong team. They beat BYU in a heartbreaker for BYU last week to tie them up in the league. Just a very gamey team. They know how to play volleyball. They don't make many errors, and they just really force you to play well. So we've got our work cut out for us. They're strong across the board, but you know, I feel that we match up well.
Well, you mentioned they tied for first in the Mountain West. Your team tied for sixth in the Big Ten. But the Big Ten is really now one of the power conferences in college volleyball, isn't it?
Yeah, and it has been for years. It's been really amazing. In fact, Penn State's rated number one in the country again. Really, you have about seven teams that get ranked in the top 30 in the country in the Big Ten. So, ranging anywhere from first to 30. So, it's a dogfight every night. And there's 330 volleyball schools supporting volleyball in the NCAA. So, it's a lot of teams, and it's just so strong across the board that every night is like being in the NCAA tournament.
We're talking with MSU head volleyball coach Kathy George. Coach, your team got some good news this week. The Big Ten announced that Corey Moster had been awarded the Defensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten. That's a great honor.
That is amazing. I'm really excited about it for Corey, and she's only a sophomore, so we're excited. Last year, she led the league in digs and in defensive saves, and she did not get that award. And then this year, I was just really happy for her because I think it's well-deserved. Lauren Lauren Wozinski got first team unanimous selection, and only about five players got that unanimous honor. Mm-hmm. And we have a freshman in Haley Peterson who got on the all-freshman team. And then our captain, Kristen Kelsey, got the Sportsman Award. So we really did pull down a few, and we were pretty pleased with all of that.
The one thing that confuses me, though, if Corey is the Defensive Player of the Year, she got honorable mention. How does a Defensive Player of the Year not get first team?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked. That's a very good question. I mean, that really is baffling. And it's just, I think, across the board, you know, they look at the attackers and setters, and they, you know, that's more of a wow play ender, mm-hmm. where Corey is the one that, you know, really snuffs those people out and doesn't give them the opportunity to score. So I just don't know that when it came down to the votes, I mean, she was just probably came up a couple short for mm-hmm. first team honors, but we look for her to be putting herself in position for All-American honors, and we think that's a real good possibility for her. And because many honorable mentions in the Big Ten, believe it or not, have gone on to second team honors. So in the All-American selection. So
well, there you
we'll
go.
We'll see what happens there.
If I'm not mistaken, I was looking through some of the information about your team earlier today, and it's not just her defense or her dig percentage, but she's a pretty good server as well.
She's a very good server, and she's a very good passer, and they don't have a stat for that. Serve-receive is probably one of the most important parts of the game, and it's when they're serving at you, it's so very important that you're able to deal with the float of the ball, the movement of the ball, and put it, you know, close to the setter so that we have a great offense to follow. We don't have the numbers to track on that, but everybody knows that she's a great serve-receiver and that she solidifies that part of the game for us. And that's where I think she really steps up and people take notice.
We're talking with volleyball coach Kathy George. Your team, Kathy, had some big wins, notably over both Minnesota and Nebraska, back-to-back when each of those were ranked in the top 10. So playing at an elite level is nothing new to your squad.
Absolutely, and we're going to have to do the same. I mean, we look at San Diego. I believe they're ranked 18th right now in the country, and UCLA 7th. So, you know, but again, that feels to us like another weekend in the Big Ten. So we feel like, okay, whatever, this is where we go from here. But yeah, again, I look at UCLA, they remind me a little bit of Minnesota, where San Diego reminds me a little bit more of like a Michigan, that type of thing. So, yep.
Your team, the way that they're playing right now, you started November with six straight wins, including those wins over Minnesota and Nebraska, lost the last two matches, a tough match at home against Michigan, even though you retained the state pride flag, and then you had to face Penn State. That's tough duty any time of the year. So you're coming off of two losses. Do you think maybe those two losses might have gotten your team a little hungry going into this tournament?
It's funny that you say that because that's exactly what it does. And you know, we've taken losses throughout the year before, and we've been really good at coming back and bouncing back from that. Penn State, obviously, you're not going to see a team that's better than them right now in the country. So that's the way we're looking at it. And it's used us to just prepare us for the moments that we'll see. And but we did. We're coming back hungry. We're not real happy about that last week.
But what coach would be, actually?
You know what's funny? I don't know if you noticed this, but if we were to come out of this and go to the Sweet 16, there's a very good chance that we could meet Michigan in at Cal Berkeley, so in the Sweet 16. That's if they get by Louisville.
I did notice that, and I've got my fingers crossed for you, that's for sure.
That would be so much fun. I'd like to avenge that loss, that's for sure.
That would be great. Well, Kathy George, good luck against San Diego tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I understand that there is a video feed of that game that people can access here in mid-Michigan.
Yes, they can. They can go to the UCLA volleyball website and get access to that feed. So that's you can watch it live.
All right, we will pass that along. And again, good luck, best of luck this weekend, and hopefully you're still playing next weekend.
Absolutely, thank you much.
All right, that's bye-bye. Kathy George, the volleyball coach at Michigan State University. And we've still got about 10 minutes left in the show now, so we can open up the phone lines and make Alex over on the other side of the glass do a little bit of work here this afternoon. So our phone number is 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-952-9527. WKAR 870. Anyone who has heard me fill in for Earl in the past knows that I have my issues with email. There is an email address. I'm not even going to bother to give it because I have trouble with email when it comes into this building for whatever reason. So we do have some Michigan news that we can talk about as we await some phone calls from you folks out there listening. Last night, tough night for Michigan State's basketball team down in South Beach area in Coral Gables as they fell to Miami University is the one in Ohio. University of Miami is the one in Florida. They fell 67-59 last night. It was really kind of a tale of two games for Michigan State. They played very, very well in the first half of that contest, had the lead at halftime, hit a big shot right at the buzzer. Gary Harris with the rebound and the putback off of the miss by, I believe it was Keith Appling, who drove down the lane. So, things were going real well for Michigan State as they went into the halftime, and then the second half started and just could not get anything to drop, especially early in that game. Just did not have a good night shooting from three-point range last night. And, I know our crew on the Spartan Sports Network was, what's changed? What's going differently? What's happening differently here? And, the thing that goes through my mind is, these guys look tired. And I think that finally the breakneck pace that they've had to go through here early in the season may have finally caught up to the Spartan basketball team, and it doesn't get any easier. They got to turn right around. They've got a home game on Saturday at the Breslin Center, and then again next Wednesday, and again the Saturday after that. So there's a lot of games. And, everybody wonders, well, why has this happened? Why all of a sudden do they have all of these games jammed in so closely? Well, take a look at what happens later on in the schedule. There's a lot of free time open. Obviously, there's no games during finals week. There'll be a game that the weekend after on that Saturday. That's the game against Tuskegee at Jenison Fieldhouse. So, you've got that little break coming up for the guys, but that's a tough week too, because, the guys have their classes and they got to cram for finals just like every other student here at Michigan State does. So that's not definitely not a week off for these guys. But then the pace really slows down as you get closer to Christmas just because of the holidays, and it's tougher to schedule opponents to come in around their finals weeks and all that stuff. So the pace does slow down a little bit there. And then there's a long break. They play right before Christmas with Texas, and then they don't play again until their conference opener on December 31st. But keep this in mind, that conference opener on December 31st, the conference has moved everything up a week. And Tom used to get a couple of good games in that week after Christmas. After the holiday there, and that's an opportunity for him to, get the guys in. They can do two-a-days at that point, because when they're not taking classes, they can spend more time with the players, they can get more done, they can work on being Michigan State more in that framework, that part of the season. And now all of a sudden you got to get right into the grinds of the Big Ten Conference even before New Year's now. And that didn't used to be the case. And so all those, the games that they used to be able to get in after Christmas, and the timing of Christmas makes a difference too, with it being on a Tuesday this year, that makes a big difference for when you can get an opponent in. So that's why all these games have been crammed up so tightly at the beginning of the season because of the fact that the conference starts earlier and they've got to get their non-conference games in when they can. So that is part of the explanation, at least, as far as what's going on with the Spartan basketball team. And, it is a young team. There's a lot of good talent on that team, but it's some young talent on that team. The only senior on that basketball team this year is Nix. And so, you know, they went from having some good senior leadership in Austin Thornton and certainly Draymond Green, and Derek Nix is going to be a very good leader for these guys. I've talked to him just recently to notice the difference that has bloomed in him since his freshman year to his senior year is just unbelievable. So, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Derek Nix is going to be a good leader on this team. It's just going to take a little bit of time for all the pieces and parts to come together and become a team. The injuries to Gary Harris and Travis Trice certainly haven't helped. Keith Appling's had to log an awful lot of minutes lately. So as they get a little bit of rest and a little bit of chance to work on their own things rather than just prepping for the next opponent, things will turn around for these guys. They're still going to be a formidable opponent in Big Ten play starting on the 31st of December when they take on, I believe it's Minnesota in that first game. We do have time to take a phone call. If you have a question or a comment for us, 355-9527 is the phone number. That's 355-WKAR, or you can call toll-free at 877-952-7870. That's 877-952-WKAR-870. Central Michigan, they got a win over a formidable opponent overnight. Bradley beat Central Michigan. Good game, though. It was 82-65 in Mount Pleasant. As Tyshawn Pickett and Jordan Prosser scored 17 points each, Bradley wins over Central Michigan 82-65. Central Michigan still kind of reeling from situation with coaching and players there as they are trying to rebuild their program. Women's basketball action, Duke got past Michigan 71-54 in the female side of the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Michigan State's women's basketball team is in North Carolina. They'll be facing the Wolfpack of North Carolina State this evening down in North Carolina. And we talked about Ndamukong Suh a little bit earlier today. Detroit Lions defensive tackle was fined $30,000 by the NFL on Wednesday. He says he didn't kick Houston Texans quarterback Matt Schaub on purpose. Would you expect him to say that he did? That's why Sue insisted he did not need to apologize to Matt Schaub. Sue spoke to reporters on Wednesday for the first time since his left cleat connected with Schaub's nether region, we'll just say, in Detroit's loss to Houston last Thursday. Sue dodged another suspension from the league, which has fined him instead for his latest questionable move on the field. His reputation, though, that has taken another hit. The NFL previously suspended Sue for 2 games last season after he stomped on Green Bay's Evan Dietrich Smith during a Thanksgiving Day game. Something about Thanksgiving days that just Ndamukong Suh should call in sick, maybe. He did say that he was sorry to Dietrich Smith for that one. And I mentioned it's not been a good 24 hours for Ndamukong Suh. Police say a traffic citation issued to the Lions defensive tackle in suburban Detroit will stand. It was cited for driving without due care and caution, and it will hold up after someone watched video footage of Sue's driving that day. Well, that's going to wrap up our show for today. I believe Earl will be back tomorrow. Alex nodding his head yes. So join him tomorrow. He'll have some great shows, a great guest as we get ready for a big action-packed weekend of sports in the capital city. You've been listening to radio station WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 on AM 870. Come back and join us tomorrow. Have yourself a safe and pleasant evening. I'll hear from you tomorrow on 870 WKAR East Lansing. I'm Scott Moore. Have fun, everyone.
From NPR News.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.